Good morning.
Good morning, Council.
My name is Mark Rotenberg. I'm counsel for Appellant Electronic Privacy Information Center. The Freedom of Information Act creates a presumption that individuals are entitled to records in the possession of federal agencies. There are 9 exemptions set out by statute, and there's a specific doctrine, the Glomar Doctrine, which allows agencies in certain circumstances to neither admit nor deny the existence of records that would be responsive to a Freedom of Information Act request. In this case, Appellant Epic submitted to the National Security Agency a Freedom of Information Act request for a variety of records. The agency chose not to undertake a search for any records that might be responsive to the request. It provided simply an affidavit in which it asserted its statutory authority to withhold the records that were requested, and upon that basis, the court below granted a motion for summary judgment. We believe that the decision of the court below was wrong, should be reversed. In fact, the 3 cases upon which the court relied, Hayden, Halperin, and Larson, all involved situations where an agency had first located records that were responsive to the request, then made a determination, and then provided the affidavit to support the determination that records could not be disclosed.
Isn't that to say that they were not Glomar cases, is that right?
Well, some Judge Ginsburg were Glomar cases. For example, in 2009, the case Judge Kavanaugh, I'm sure, is familiar with, the Larson case, there were a series of Freedom of Information Act requests that were submitted to the NSA and to the CIA and to the State Department regarding violence in Guatemala. The NSA actually responded in 3 of those 4 requests. They provided 10 documents in full, 38 documents were withheld in part, 138 documents were withheld entirely, and then there was one narrow category of documents regarding the request from petitioner Portillo Barto involving the abduction of her family in Guatemala in 1981. In that case, which was a Glomar case, the agency had found responsive documents and had produced Devon indexed. And only in this last category of documents, where the agency said that to acknowledge or to deny the existence of responsive records might jeopardize the agency's signal intelligence mission, did the court find that the Glomar response was appropriate and upheld it.
So to the extent that the agency asserted the Glomar response, it was upheld, and they had not produced documents responsive to that.
They had not produced documents.
It's exactly this case in part, and there's another aspect to the case.
Well,
I don't know why you're trying to distinguish it.
My point, Judge Ginsburg, is that was a request with regard to simply one category of documents. Multiple categories were before the agency. Some of those documents that were requested regarding violence in Guatemala did not apparently implicate the agency's signal intelligence function, or at least not so much that the agency was not prepared to respond.
Insofar as the agency invoked the Glomar response, it didn't produce anything. It just gave that response, and that was ratified.
Yes. Now, we think what's critical to understand even that part of the Larson decision is the prior decision in Hayden. And what Hayden says is this activity must be integrally related to a function of the agency. And in fact, the Larson court found that the signal intelligence activity of the NSA was integrally related. Now, on this point, it's important to note the disjunction between the subject matter of the FOIA request that Appellant Epic submitted to the agency and the content of the Janicek declaration that provided the basis for the determination below. The content of the Epic FOIA request speaks to security practices involving commercial users of Google's products and services, using Gmail, for example, or Google Docs, which is something that hundreds of millions of people outside of the federal government do. In fact, there's not even a single reference within the Epic FOIA request to a function integrally related to the NSA's mission. Whereas the Janicek declaration, on which the lower court relied, speaks repeatedly to the agency's function, which is to secure national computer information systems, to safeguard the Department of Defense computer security systems, And as to that function, there is no dispute. Those materials would be properly protected under B3. In fact, the existence of documents subject to that B3 exemption could conceivably also neither be acknowledged nor denied. But with respect to this FOIA request, which concerns activities that would fall outside of the agency's mission or functions under the approach in Hayden, and we would say also under the language in Section 6 of the National Security Agency Act of 1959, the agency could not reasonably assert its B3 exemption.
When you say outside the language of the Act, that language is extraordinarily broad. Nothing in this Act or any other law shall be construed to require the disclosure of any information with respect to the activities of the agency.
We certainly agree, Judge Kavanaugh, that is broad language. And we also looked at the history of that language. That language arose from a specific concern that the National Security Agency had in 1959 regarding the fact that it would be subject to the Classification Act of the Civil Service Commission. And the agency, in a letter from Acting Director Quarles to Senate President Pro Tem Richard Nixon, said that the agency needed protection against this form of mandatory disclosure. Now, you will see that the language in Section 6...
But the language itself, and I'll let you finish, sorry. The language itself doesn't indicate any such narrowly defined purpose. And the Supreme Court told us last year in the Milner case... in rejecting 30 years of this court's precedent on a different FOIA exemption, that we should pay closer attention to the precise statutory text. So I'm inclined to start there.
And we're not here to discuss Milner, Your Honor.
Right.
And I agree. I think the language in Section 6 uses precisely these terms, organization and functions, information regarding the activities thereof.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is significant to us that activities is put as a secondary clause in that Section 6 language. We concede that as to organization and functions, those are for Hayden purposes integrally related to the mission of the agency and clearly within B3. But as this court admonished in Founding Church of Scientology, the 1979 case, that term activities is very open-ended. And there has to be some willingness to push back a bit. There's almost a tautology here.
Well, that's the kind of, this is where I think Milner is relevant. That's from the same era as other FOIA cases of this court that were specifically rejected in Milner for putting that kind of purpose limitation on language in FOIA. And Justice Kagan's opinion was very emphatic in that lower courts in FOIA cases, whether it makes the exemption broad or makes the exemption narrow, should follow the text of the exemption.
Well, we agree, Your Honor. And as I said, we think not only with respect to the history of the language and what would be found both in the letter from the NSA director and the Senate report as well, which reiterates the point that the NSA had raised, but also the text itself. In other words, the text could have said the activities of the NSA shall not be disclosed. The text could have said the organization, function, and activities of the NSA shall not be disclosed. But there was clearly some intent in the plain text of the statute to set apart organization and functions. Now, we think that's particularly significant with respect to this FOIA case because the agency activity in this area, which involves information assurance, concerns both classified and unclassified activities. And the agency has conceded this. On its public website, it says of its information assurance activities that it has for more than 10 years provided unclassified information to the general public about its work to help safeguard computer security systems outside of the federal government. And on this point, the Janicek Declaration is quite revealing, because the Janicek Declaration, in speaking to the B3 authority, is quite forceful with respect to the agency's responsibility and mission as to securing government computing systems. But the Janicek Declaration goes on to describe how the agency also participates in public-private partnerships and engages in assistance to commercial vendors. Now, we're not disputing the legality of those activities. We're simply pointing out that for purposes of asserting the B3 exemption, which is intended to protect the agency's function, and even though broad, is not absolute, these activities, which the agency itself has acknowledged exist in the unclassified realm, should properly be disclosed to the public, or at least there should be some basis upon which to test the agency's assurance. Now, I'd like to go a bit further down this road and point out that in the request that EPIC made to the agency, we were asking specifically about matters that the agency itself has put into the public record. We're not only asking about the communications between Google and NSA. We are also asking about communications regarding decisions to encrypt or not encrypt Gmail, which is the Google service, as well as Google Docs, which is a web-based application. Now, those activities, apart from the communications or agreement that might or might not exist between Google and NSA, are described on a public NSA website. This is in petitioner's brief, pages 19 and 20. And on that public website, the NSA makes certain recommendations about security practices for people outside of the federal government. And with respect to Gmail, it says, in fact, that users are encouraged to use SSL, which is the encryption technique that helps safeguard personal information. Now, that is precisely the subject matter of the second category in our request to the agency. And we believe that under Wolf versus CIA, the 2007 opinion of this court, where there is contradictory evidence in the record, there must be some opportunity to then challenge the basis of the affidavit. And we also believe, of course, that the agency should complete its record request. Because as in Wolf, the agency now finds itself in the situation where it is on the one hand saying that it cannot discuss these matters because they're exempt on B3, and on the other hand, putting into the public record information about the exact same subject matter. Now, under Wolf, where the summary judgment decision was reversed and the case was remanded, we think we would produce a similar result. In this respect also, the decision below is deficient for two different reasons. The first reason being that there was no records found responsive to the request, and clearly under the FOIA, there's an obligation upon the agency to provide some factual basis for that determination. And secondly, the Janicek Declaration itself is vague and conclusory. In fact, in some places, it's actually illogical. What the Janicek Declaration says is that to even acknowledge that communications were received from Google regarding a security problem that the company might have had in the provision of its services to the public would necessarily reveal weaknesses within the federal agencies and therefore even the existence or non-existence of such communications could not be acknowledged. Now, that is a very broad assertion of Glomar that this court has never before accepted. Typically, what this court looks to is some close coupling between the facts at issue and the agency exemption that's asserted. So, for example, if a person claims that they may have been a CIA employee and therefore is entitled to certain records maintained by the agency, and the agency says, if we reveal that information to you, that would be to reveal our sources and methods, and therefore is contrary to the National Security Act of 1947. It is clearly the case that to reveal the fact that someone may or may not have previously been a CIA employee would trigger the interest that the Act seeks to protect. But that's not what the NSA is doing here. The NSA is speculating that under some scenarios, it is conceivable that if they were to acknowledge the existence of the records, it would therefore trigger the exemption that the agency is entitled to assert. But that's not how this circuit has previously treated these types of assertions in Glomar cases. There is a much closer alignment. The facts must be tethered to the exemption, as the court has said, to justify the assertion of Glomar in this case. I'd like to suggest also that when the agency asserts a B3 exemption with respect to a category of records, there is also the opportunity to test that B3 assertion. Judge Brown, for example, in Sussman versus Marshall, a case recently concerning the B3 exemption with regard to the federal criminal rules of procedure, federal rules of criminal procedure and the secrecy of grand juries, you determined that there were grand jury matters that could be properly released, even though in some circumstances B3 might otherwise apply, because the rules regard specific individuals and not all activity. And I believe Judge Ginsburg, it was in Smith versus Department of Justice, involving wiretapping and transcripts of prison communications, where you said that even though wiretap could be B3 as applied in that particular case, it was not. Well, I see that my time has expired.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Catherine Hancock on behalf of Appalee, the National Security Agency. On appeal, EPIC only contests, as far as the propriety of the Glomar response, one specific category of the records, and therefore it requests Category 2, and only a specific subset of those. That Category 2 involved all records of communication between NSA and Google concerning Gmail, including but not limited to Google's decision to fail to routinely encrypt Gmail messages prior to January 13, 2010. EPIC speculates that there could have been some unsolicited communications from Google to NSA, which would only reveal information about Google and not about NSA. The Janicek Declaration, however, explains that communications between the two agencies could tend to reveal whether or not there has been a relationship between Google and NSA, and the fact that...
That could be redacted, couldn't it?
No, Your Honor, I don't think it could. And the reason is, if there's even an unsolicited communication from Google to NSA...
Wait a minute. We haven't consulted the documents, so I don't know that we know it can be redacted or not, right? But it might be possible, it might not. If you get a letter, a letter from somebody, if I get junk mail or email, it doesn't tell you I have a relationship with the source.
Correct, Your Honor, but I think if there's here that NSA determined that this whole category of records would, acknowledging the existence of any records within this category, would be exempt under Section 7.
But it includes, in one instance at least, it includes a document or a letter coming from a third party outside the agency, the content of which may in part reflect upon things that some relationship that pre-exists the letter and would have to be redacted or maybe even suppressed in its entirety. But without consulting the letter, I don't know how you can determine categorically that it would be revealing of the activities of the agency.
Well, let me try to explain that, Your Honor. And I think the reason is because if Google sends an unsolicited email to NSA, let's say, there's only one reason within the context of the FOIA request that Google would have done so, and that would have been because it was trying to alert the NSA as to some security vulnerability or something about the hacker attack regarding Gmail, because this
yes,
is...
Yes, I agree. And whether that's relates to some ongoing relationship or is something that's out of the blue as far as the agency is concerned, we don't know.
Well, but NSA concluded that such a communication, because it would only be made for one purpose, which relates to the NSA's information assurance mission...
Well, it's a purpose of the third party who may or may not be familiar with what the agency does.
Well, Google would be aware of that because the mission itself is public and the purpose of protecting government information networks, that is public. And so for Google to have sent an email regarding Gmail to NSA would tend to confirm whether or not there was a relationship with NSA or whether NSA tends to encourage or rely upon private reporting from companies.
It suggests that that's a distinct probability. I don't know how one can determine the matter, though, without looking at the document.
This court has been clear, I think, in terms of when the agency makes a Glomar response based on and submits an affidavit explaining a logical, plausible explanation why the documents are exempt and they don't have to confirm or deny their existence, that there is no reason to conduct a search.
That's often the case. If one can conclude on the basis of the initial affidavit, right, or even a supplemental affidavit, right?
Yes, and I think here the affidavit clearly explained why that the information requested falls within, would tend to reveal information about NSA's functions or activities. And in Wolf, this court specifically rejected the notion that plaintiff's argument that to review the propriety of a Glomar response, that the court must order the agency to conduct a search of the records.
Here's what the court said in the Scientology case, this court. It's too much, too soon, to tell whether NSA can establish its claims by more detailed public or classified affidavits, or whether in-camera review of the controverted documents themselves will become essential to the resolution proper. Right? So that is one possibility, right, that the affidavit may be insufficient to account for some or all of the documents under request.
Well, and in that case, Your Honor, the affidavit the court found was clearly insufficient, and part of why the affidavit was insufficient was on appeal, government...
I understand your argument, but I don't see it in the affidavit. I don't see the facts you're talking about in the affidavit. There's nothing specific that I recall. Maybe there was a reference to the incoming as opposed to the other documents that are under request.
Well, the affidavit explained in part, and this would be on JA page 49, that the NSA is dependent on information from a number of intelligence and open sources in order to have early awareness of potential malicious activity or vulnerability. So NSA and then the next paragraph, in paragraph 6, it says the U.S. government is largely dependent on commercial technology for its information systems. Part of this all explains that the NSA relies on or may encourage private reporting from companies such as Google if there's a partnership there. And if that information were subject to disclosure under FOIA, that would hinder that part of NSA's functions and activities, which would be relying on private reporting.
Suppose you got a letter from a technology company saying, we understand that you have a program or responsibilities in this area and thought you might like to know of something that we've recently experienced that may be significant. And then the rest follows. You have no prior relationship with that company. Right? But it turns out what they're reporting is highly relevant to the program that you run. Don't you think the first paragraph that I just read would be releasable?
I'm not sure that it would, Your Honor, because again, they are relying on the public part of NSA's information assurance mission. So to the extent they're giving information to the NSA that would be relevant to that mission.
They don't know when they send it. They think it might be.
But it would tend to confirm again that NSA has relationships or might have a relationship with that certain company and might rely.
Indeed, on its face, it would deny that because the letter began saying, you know, we don't know whether this is of interest to you. We understand you have program responsibilities in this area.
Again, I think it would show, but it would tend to show the start of a relationship and a communication back and forth. But I mean,
forth maybe, but not back.
I'd say too, that, Your Honor, that this case is distinctly different in that the only thing plaintiffs have alleged here is unsolicited communication, such as if Google sent an email to NSA about Gmail that was maybe advertising, you know, hey, we have Gmail service, and they sent it to some NSA employee to say about the availability. well, that is a totally innocuous kind of email, which, yes, would be releasable under FOIA, but that's not the type of document that plaintiffs are seeking here. Within the context of their FOIA request, it's clear that they are seeking documents that would tend to confirm or deny a relationship.
Why is the word... Go ahead.
The affidavit says this about the incoming. That's the only thing that applies to it. Confirming or denying the existence of any such record would be to reveal whether NSA, in fulfilling one of its key missions, determined that vulnerabilities or cybersecurity issues pertaining to Google or certain of its commercial technologies could make the U.S. government information systems susceptible to exploitation or attack by adversaries, and if so, whether NSA collaborated with Google to mitigate them. How could an incoming, why must the incoming report, whatever it is, letter relating to this incident, why must that reveal something that the agency has determined?
Because again...
It may, I understand, but why must it? Inherently, so that you don't have to look at it.
Because it tends to confirm or deny the fact that NSA may be encouraging or relying on private reporting, which is an essential function or activity within its information assurance mission.
The mere fact that they sent a letter I think it has to do more than tend to. I think it would have to do an inspection, actually reveal something. But you're saying the fact that the letter was received would tend to reveal.
Yes, because again, the only reason Google would be sending an email communication about...
Is that dependent on it being Google as opposed to the unknown company that I hypothesized?
Well, I'm just talking about Google in this sense, but no, whatever the unknown company...
So even a company that says, you don't know us, we don't know you, but we understand you have an interest in this area, and as patriotic citizens, we're going to tell you something.
If, I guess, it was made in the context of records for that company, I guess, in the context of this FOIA request, since it's clear that they are seeking documents from Google about Gmail, there's only one reason Google would have sent...
It's clear that they're seeking anything, is it? They just got something in the mail.
Sorry, Your Honor.
That the agency, I think you were referring, meaning the agency was seeking something.
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor, Epic. Communications between Google and NSA regarding Gmail. And in this context, the only reason Google would have had to send a communication about Gmail to NSA is because there would be some security vulnerability or something related to this cyber attack, and which implicates the NSA's information assurance mission.
Point. Thank you, Judge Kavanaugh.
You focused a bit on the term relationship, but that's not what you're hinging your case on, is it? Whether there's a pre-existing relationship?
No, Your Honor, it's not. It's all hinges, I think, on the functions or activities, which is protected by Section 6.
Unsolicited communications relating in some way to the activities of the agency, you say, fall within this exemption, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so the word relationship, which you've said many times, I think, isn't relevant, right?
Only so far as it trying to in the fact that plaintiffs have conceded that documents that have to do with a relationship would be protected,
right,
within Section 6.
Mm-hmm.
What's your response to counsel's argument that Epic's request was only asking for matters that the agency had already put in the public record, and therefore their position is contradictory?
Your Honor, in terms of, I think, two things. The information that's in the public record about NSA's information assurance activity is very limited. And certainly the fact that there's limited information that NSA has an information assurance mission does not waive the agency's ability under FOIA to protect further details that are protected functions and activities, similar to the Wilner case, where the TSP program, the terrorist surveillance program, was the overall knowledge of that was not classified and could be made public, the details of that program could still be protected under FOIA. And that's the same here with the details of relationships or communications with specific private providers who are involved in NSA's information assurance mission. If the court has no further questions, we would ask this court to affirm the decision below.
Thank you. Mr. Rothenberg, I don't think that you had any time left, but we'll give you 2 minutes.
All right, thank you. I'd like to make three brief points. One, counsel said that the only reason that EPIC had interest in this was related to the NSA's mission. That's not true. As the FOIA request indicates, we had gone to the Federal Trade Commission prior to the incident in China in 2010 to express concern about this specific matter, the failure to routinely encrypt Gmail. We were not even aware of the NSA's interest in this activity when we pursued this issue. And in fact, our FOIA request doesn't reflect any particular interest in NSA's mission with respect to government computing systems. Our interest was on behalf of the non-government users of this popular email service. Secondly, counsel said that there's a very limited, I think was her phrase, disclosure with respect to agency activity about mission. That's also not the case. This specific issue, the decision to encrypt or not encrypt Gmail, is on an NSA website, and the NSA expresses an opinion on that topic. That is our second category of request in the FOIA. Finally, I'd like to point out, while there's understandably great deference to the agency in this area, both under Section 6 and under the Glomar Doctrine, the case which established Glomar, Filippi, resulted in the overturning of a summary judgment and a decision to remand the case to the district court so that there would be an opportunity to create as full a public record as possible. And we believe that that's necessary here, because the FOIA requires the adversarial testing of the agency's assertions to determine whether, in fact, the agency has properly used the exemptions that are available to us. In our view, the district court had an insufficient factual record. The agency did not conduct the search it was required to do. The affidavit was conclusory and vague, and therefore the summary judgment motion should be overturned, our cross motion for summary judgment granted, and the agency asked to do what it's supposed to do under the law, find records responsive to the request.
Thank you.
Thank you.